press record. Not by my phone, that would be bad. So, today is Wednesday the 31st of May 2023. My name is Paul Hunt from Mancap Cymru, and could you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is Janet Kench, and I'm a committee member and a volunteer with Mancap Ceredigion.
So how did you get started with Mancap Ceredigion?
It was when we moved back here to West Wales. I was born and bred in West Wales, actually where I live now is about 5 minutes from where I was brought up, in Sandyfyrio. I moved to Cardiff to do some work, and then, was there for, I had my two children and came back here with the whole family back in 2001, because we were always looking for services for my daughter's got a learning disability. We were looking for different organisations and got involved with Mancap Ceredigion. And that was 22, 23 years ago. On the basis of knowing what was available, found out that Mancap Ceredigion didn't really do anything for children. They were basically concentrated on adults, which would have meant me walking away from them, really, because it didn't benefit Beth. But I was talked into staying and getting involved with committee work, and was on that committee then from the word go.
So how old is Beth then now?
She's now 30 this year. She's born in 92, so she'll be 31 this year.
So you spent some time in Cardiff?
She was born in 92. I only lived in Barry. She was born in Sandock Hospital. And it took us a few years to get some... Well, actually, we've never had a diagnosis, a proper one. But obviously, we knew she had a learning disability. When she was about two, we'd moved to Swansea at that time. Then we had our son, Dylan, her brother. So we pretty much knew when she was about two or three that she would have some difficulties. Mm.
And how easy was it to find services there compared to Ceredigion?
Just as difficult, really. I can remember the time where the nurse in the hospital, in the, like the district nurse, whatever you want to call her, in the doctor's surgery saying, you know, we'll have you assessed, but yeah, it sounds as if she'll need help. And I can remember thinking, right, let's see what help is out there. And sat in we had like a little library place in the house with a phone and desk. And I thought, right, let's start now then. And started ringing people up. And they then would pass me on to somebody else, to another organisation, so did that. And I suddenly realised that it was going to be very difficult to find support or help or advice, because during that hour, I followed all the places I was led to and came back to the first person I spoke to. So there was a lot of agencies out there, but no concrete support in any way. This is in Swansea now. All well-meaning and everything, but nothing with practical support. Then we got social services involved, and that meant loads of assessments. And I mean loads, and they'd be coming to the house, a social worker, a nurse, a psychologist, or something else. And they'd come to the house, and they'd be asking you the same questions. And you'd think, oh, God, didn't you read the file before you came? And I felt like somebody said, well, what you should do is a record, like we're recording today. Record everything and just say to them, look, I'll go and make the coffee while you listen to the recording. Because, you know, it was just repeating itself. It's very little support, really. But then you don't know often what support you need either. Now, that's what I found difficult. But we were there then for a few years, and then we decided, she started a little school in Town Hill, which was really lovely, Town Hill School. A lot of people were very snobbish about that. We tried to get into a Welsh school, and they said, I'll never forget this doctor telling me in single hospital, well, you know, you'd probably best stick to just teaching her English because, you know, when she grows up, there won't be many people speaking Welsh that'll be able to support her. So, you know, it was best to... And I regret that, really regret it, because, you know, she could have handled two languages easily. But anyway, she went to Tanner School, lovely school. And then we decided to come back home. And it meant going through the whole process again, if you like. But there was a difference, really. There was a really good children's department, or whatever you want to call it. I think it was in Penmorfa. And the person who led it was Erin Bray. She's retired now, but I think she's still involved with a lot of stuff in the area. And she had this unit there, and they were really, really good. They had a good record. They set up a good respite system, although we never used it ourselves. They were involved with DASH, which was a parent-led organisation that did holiday things. You know, they took over these schools, and you could come along, and you know, kids and the siblings as well, you know, would be in little groups and stuff. They did some respites in Teatlin in Ceding near Aberaeron, where people could, again, Bethan didn't take part in that, but you know, you could go, your child could go there for a week and enjoy just being with other people, you know.
For the purposes of the tape, I should probably just say there's a gigantic dog sniffing around.
Which is not mine, by the way. So as a unit, they were really, really good. But again, it was limited what they could do as well, really. But going back to my captive together, it was very limited what they could do because they were only really looking at adults. But I always used to think, well, I'm glad I did get in contact with them because... You know, while your child is a child with a learning disability up until 18 to 25, you know, there's a duty for supporting them, you know, educationally and social services wise. And getting involved in Megacritikion highlighted how different it was basically as an adult with a disability, because that duty goes out through the window, really. You're entitled to as an adult with a learning disability is totally different to the child. So it wasn't so much a shock to me then. And I sort of planned ahead for Bethan as being adult, knowing there wouldn't be anything really for her. Far, far less than the support and services that she had as a child. Growing up in Ceredigion as a child with learning disabilities was great for Bethan. She was lucky to be in Llandyssil Primary School. They were very, very good. She went to an excellent secondary school in Newcastle Emlyn, with a special unit there, headed by Helen Ling. So, you know, we did, her childhood and her upbringing was good compared to a lot of people I know who have a tough time of it, really.
I think we might have to pause and get the dog out because I think the breathing is going to be coming on the recording.
Oh, yeah, I'll pause it.
No. Let's pause it. So we're recording again just to get rid of the dog. So how did you feel when you first found out that Bethan had a learning disability?
Oh, God, I don't know. I felt confused, I think, more than anything. The thing was that Bethan was born and a lot of my friends were having kids at the same time. So... she looked healthy. She looked beautiful, you know, to look at. But there were milestones that she wasn't in compared to my friend's kids. So, you know, she would be walking the same time as them, not talking the same time as them. I can remember thinking of the nurse saying, well, you know, your child should have 100 words in her vocabulary, and she was nowhere near that. But the main thing we noticed was her socialisation, you know, where the other kids were starting to, after about 6 months, you're noticing other children and getting involved and playing with things. Bethan wasn't like that, really. And it took a while to convince doctors and nurses that I thought there was something wrong, you know. They'd say, oh, well, you know, children, they take a while. You know, she'll catch her, you know, and all of this business. And she didn't. And I think once I was told, yeah, you might be right here, I thought, no, right, thank God I've got something right. Let's, you know. And I think there was a sense of, or a mixture of relief or, oh, I don't know, just the sense of, like, you know, now we can get on with doing something about it. But as a parent, you always have these feelings of great sadness and grief and, you know, depending on how severe that disability is, you know, they will be doing other things that your friends' kids will be doing, like, you know, going to university or getting married or having children. And I think those milestones still hit you and you can get quite emotional about it. But I'm lucky that, you know, I'm quite positive about Bethan. She's quite an innate girl in her ways. And because of that, I'd always be positive and she's beautiful and I can't think of her in any other way. So I, you know, I can't say I was upset, might be the wrong word, or hurt or whatever. But with me, it was a matter of just getting on with it and making sure that she was happy, content and safe. And I think it changed my view of how to be a parent and how what I wanted for my children. Because I think if Bethan hadn't been around, I would have been one of these pushy parents, you know, quite ambitious for them and push them to do this. Whereas I'm far more relaxed. And I certainly more relaxed with Dylan about, you know, how what he's wanted to do in his life. And that, you know, the mantra is as long as they're happy and safe, that's it, you know, and that's all I want for them. But yeah, so that was basically how I felt.
A lot of the MenCap groups were set up to provide social opportunities for people with a learning disability. Having had a son without a disability to start with, what were the differences in terms of those opportunities?
What, between Bethan and Dylan?
Yes.
Massive. We suddenly found out with Dylan how easy it was to bring up a child and go through those milestones. I mean, with Dylan, he potty trained himself, really, basically. He'd go to sleep at normal times. He'd eat what, you know, there wasn't any issues about feeding or anything. He'd socialise with other children, go off and play and stuff. So there's a massive difference between Bethan and the other. But what was lucky about us having Dylan as a second child was that Bethan seemed to speed up on her progression. She started speaking a lot faster and, you know, her milestones were a bit faster getting through, knowing that Dylan basically was forcing her to catch up. I mean, Dylan would have, you know, whereas with us, it would take us a little time to coax Bethan to say things and whatever. Dylan would demand it, you know, oh, come on, Bethan, let's go, and, you know. And it's been like that through her life, really. And today now, he's a great support with her, very defensive. And, you know, we'll look after her forever, I believe. But what it's also done for Dylan is that he's been a better person for it, I think, because I know Headmaster was telling me about him in primary school. One thing about Dylan is if there's a child who is new starting, or there's a child who's sad or being bullied or finding it difficult, Dylan's always the one to suss it all out or to go towards the child and support them in a way, be friendly and comfort them and so forth. And that is because he's been Bethan's brother, you know? And because of that, I think that's why he's gone into the field of supporting my Cupcake himself, you know. He supports us with all the social stuff that we do and all the workshops and stuff like that, and they love him. But, you know, he treats them as equals. He treats them as friends, you know, loves them dearly. But the other thing is, I think the reason he's gone into teaching now is, again, because he's a type that wants to support and help. And that, I truly believe that's because, you know, he's had a system of him to support.
So, back to Mancap Caradigian, how did you first become aware of them?
Well, again, by ringing, when we came back to West Wales, ringing up all these organisations, you know, getting a list of stuff and just ringing. And I got to meet the chair, who's an amazing man, Bill Thompson, who'd been a chair. He's now passed away. And Mencap in those days were a bit different to what Mencap can do, rather. Was different to what it is today. And like in those makeup and in those days were far more involved with the provision of services and supported housing. They owned, you know, a few houses in the county, and they you know, employed, trained, you know, they were, you know, that ran the whole supported housing issue. And Bill Thompson was a great one for, I think he was ex-service. I think he was either Navy or, you know, one of these gone through the war times, you know, Sergeant Major, but such a gentle, lovely gentleman, you know. And he'd kept the ship together and had sort of set up all of these things, respite, supported housing, services, social clubs and all of that. So it was all very, very well set up and everything when I got involved. He was very well respected by the professionals as well, by the authorities, you know, and well liked by the members. And I think one of the nicest letters, I have a few letters that have been given to me in my life from, you know, people I've worked with when I've left. They've sent me a nice letter to say goodbye, you know. But the one I treasure the most is from him, that he sent, because I had to leave Mencap Caradigian for some reason, because I was concentrating on some work issues. And I said to him, look, you know, I won't be able to do so much. And one of the letters I treasure the most is the letter he sent me. And it's there, and I often have a read of it when, you know, you think, oh, God, you know, it's getting too much, or, you know, you get your bad days. And you read that letter and it makes you feel really good, you know. But he was an amazing man. And he was the lead of a big, you know, quite a set of quite strong committee members made up of parents. They ran everything, really, basically, until Mencap Cymru came along, or Mencap National. I can't remember them. Sinclair. I think Sinclair.
Clive. No, that's the...
Sinclair was the guy who came down to do the transitional bit of Mencap Caradigian, giving the houses
a... Howard.
Howard Sinclair?
Yes. Clive is the guy that invented the seat, the bikes. Okay. Howard Sinclair, yeah.
And I remember he came to the Feathers Hotel to have a meeting with us and to reassure us that we were doing the right thing, really. But I didn't get involved with that so much. And I think the transition was quite smooth because the authorities helped it along. And there were some housing associations as well. And we have today supported housing in the county that are managed out by Mencap and by Myrus. But they wouldn't be what they are without Bill Thompson and that committee. They set it up. It was like fine, you know, really well looked after, well managed. So it was quite easy to just pick it up and go. Yeah.
What was the reason that they transferred over to...
I don't know what it was. I think, I don't know, because I wasn't involved with it at the time, whether it was because the parents were getting quite elderly now, and it was a lot for them. And it I mean, every organisation will find this. It's hard to get people on board, committees and being trustees. There's a lot of responsibility nowadays for that. Whether it was that or whether, and this is my guess, whether the legislations and so forth and the amount of liability the authorities had, whether it was better for them to get involved more with it, really. And it's so Menkaup then was involved with the whole thing of support and services and education and, you know, living accommodation and everything to what we are today, which is something totally different, and is run totally differently as well. But he was an amazing man, and we were very, very lucky to have him in Ceredigion, and we were very lucky to have the committee as well.
You've mentioned that when you joined Menkaup Ceredigion, didn't do much with younger people. Yeah. Were there any other young people of members, or were the parents similar age to you when you first joined?
No, I did. They were a lot older than me, the parents, because obviously their kids were adults. My child was a child. But the great thing about it was, though, Bethan and Dylan got involved with all the activities. You know, if we had a disco, I'd bring the kids along, you know. So the committee got to know them very, very early on. But what was really great is that my children were getting to know the adults with learning disabilities. I was learning what it was going to be like in the future, and so did Bethan and Dylan. And now Bethan and Dylan are friends with these adults who are now obviously in their 50s and 60s. So they know them as friends now. It is literally like a family. Mm. We know them all. We know their parents. We know, you know, what they had for breakfast, you know, what their favourite things are. And I think the one thing that with Menkaup Ceredigion is, and they're probably the same with other branches in Wales, and something that people don't realise or need to realise and need not to forget, is that with Menkaup Ceredigion, we are the only constant in their lives from the time they come on board as adults when they're 18, 25, to the time they die. Because they will have support workers coming and going, social workers will come and go, doctors, nurses, teachers, you know, you name it, whatever, they'll come and go. But with Menkaup Ceredigion, we're pretty much there, because, you know, we don't change in any way. We're the same committee, we're the same parents, we're the same members, nothing changes. So that, I think that's quite a good thing about our organisation. And for Bethan and Dylan, you know, they've got people that they've known, like the members I know, that we see coming to Gateway and to all the events that we hold. I've known them for nearly 25 years. You know, so there's a certain element of trust and knowledge, which in effect is really, really important when you're planning on, you know, what we do as a service now. You know, we're able to listen to them and understand them more than anybody, really, besides their own family and friends, obviously. But certainly we know them more than a social worker. And that's not, you know, being disrespectful to the social worker, but that's just being practically honest, you know. They're not going to know what people are like after knowing them for 25 years compared to knowing them from a file for 5 minutes, you know.
Yeah. How did you gradually, your role with Menkaup Ceredigion gradually change and over the years? Because you're the chair now, is that?
No, I was a chair. Yeah. No, don't think of that. My heart goes out to chairs, you know, deputy chairs, secretaries, treasurers. I done the whole week thing. I came on board really with another lady who was involved with Menkaup Ceredigion then, and that was Karen Blower. And we were both the same age, the same, we liked the same thing, so we got quite friendly. And our job really was to organise all the discos. But we were new onto that committee, and much as I loved all the committee members, oh, they were old-fashioned about their attitude to people with learning disabilities. I mean, we had to bring them up to the 20th century. You know, a lot of stuff had happened since, you know, 1983 with the new legislation and you know, the turn of the century with education and, you know, the Education Act. But they seemed so back in the 1960s. And although we lived them to bits, Karen and I had to work really hard to, we used to give money out to organisations. And one of the things that I think it was Canova and Stefan, the day centre in Lampeter for people with disabilities, wanted a computer. So they sent us a letter to the committee and we then had a discussion. And most of the committee members were aghast. What, a computer? Well, what do you mean a computer? People with disabilities don't use computers. But what do you, that's silly, ridiculous. And we had to really fight hard to convince our committee that actually, yeah, you know. And of course today, with phones, I've had members come to me and I'd say, oh, because I'm not technical, as you know, and I'd give them the phone saying, well, how do I do this, Ashley, or, you know, Yusuf, or whoever it is. And they'll take the phone off me and they've sorted it out. So technically, our members are really up there, especially with social media. Perhaps a little bit too much in social media, but never mind. But it was difficult. I can remember one instance. We were organising it was our first go at organising a Christmas disco in Tiglin. And I was at Lampeter University. Can't remember either one. And we were dealing with a menu. And we decided that, oh, we'll have, you know, chicken and, you know, and these chicken, they can't have chicken. We always have sausage and chips. I said, why? Well, it's easy to cut it up for them. And Karen and I would look at each other and think, this is from another era, you know? So, but we won that time. We got them chicken and, you know, proper dinner that they could cut themselves type of thing. So we were in a, you know, it was, you could see the generation gap there, really big time. And I'm not sure, I think Bill Thompson was with us, you know, he said, oh yeah, I get you. But a lot of the committee members were really stuck in, you know, the old fashioned way of looking after or the awareness of people with disabilities in those days.
So how they pushed back on some of those things? And
definitely, yeah. I can remember talking to them about the development of Cardiff and Aberhab Gateway and how that started back 60 years ago, again through Mencap. You know, they used to have gateways, clubs, so they still do. We still do. But in those days, it was, if you walked into a room, it would be the children, and you're talking children in their 40s, 50s, with the mums were knitting, and the children would do jigsaws. That was your social life. And they used to call it the knitting club, because the mums would bring their knitting along, you know. Those attitudes have totally changed now. I mean, our social clubs now, whereas they used to be run, and many of them used to do, in day centres, we purposely took them out to the day centres, because we wanted them to be in the community. So I know that Aberystwyth is a bit difficult because Aberystwyth is run separate to us and they have it in a football club or whatever, not in a running club because there's about 70 or 80 of them there. But the ones that we've set up in it down south, it's like Cardigan, now is in Cardigan Castle Cafe, again with the community, the one in Upper Island. That one's a bit difficult. We're in a hall for that one. But the one in Newcastle Emlyn is in a pub. And the one we're going to be setting up soon in Flintasil, that's going to be a pub. Purposely, because we're in the community. And what we found is that the community are now getting involved with us. Last Saturday, we had a meeting in the Three Compasses net in Newcastle Emlyn. And they did a buffet for us. And we brought our music system with us, which is the best thing we've ever bought. And we had, you know, microphones, and we were all listening to music and in the beer garden, dancing and everything. And all of a sudden, the locals are coming out and joining in. And we've got a video of them all dancing with us. And a group had come up for the weekend from Swansea, and they joined in. And we, you know, we had the microphones. We were all singing like karaoke. And we were we were selling raffles because of a bit of a fundraising thing. And they were going, it's 20, 30 quid. Say, no, keep it. Made a fortune on it. But what was good was that the community was involved with us, and we were involved with the community in front of you. And I think that's, if you're asking for the difference between what it was like and what it is now, that's a very big positive. As far as our members concerned,
all the different communities been with the groups that you take into cafes.
Absolutely. But, well, think of it this way. You know, people want to be kind. You know, there are more good people than bad people, as far as I'm concerned. There are more people there who want to help you than want to turn their backs. So you want to take advantage of that, really. But on the business side of it, can you imagine, when we went to Newcastle Emlyn to second one, well, the Cardigan one, the Aberaeron one was getting too full. So we went to Cardigan to decamp to some of the ones. And we opened one in Cardigan. That was getting too full. So we then opened one in Newcastle Emlyn. And I can remember going through Newcastle Emlyn, which in its day was pub town, really. There were 26 pubs in it, you know, in those days. It's not so much that now. But going around the pubs to see, you know, whether we could, you know, open some sort of, what you got. And everybody was really, they'd love it. But the one we went for, we went there on a Wednesday night, I'll never forget, and the pub was empty midweek, you know, nothing happens midweek. And there were fewer locals in there, nothing very much, you know. And it was the Three Compasses, and we looked at it, it was ideal. It had a snooker table, great. It was an area to dance, there was a place to eat, beautiful beer garden. And Wednesday was a quiet night. So we had a word with Pete and Jill. I said, yeah, great, you know, if you want, we'll do some food and, we'll welcome them, yeah, not a problem. So now, tonight, there's going to be a gateway there. There's going to be about 30 or 40 people there. Every one of them will be eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll probably spend a good tenner with drinks and everything. You know, so it's gone from a pub with a couple of locals there on a Wednesday night to a pub that's heaving. And what's good about it is that the locals, knowing there'll be a disco or, you know, there'll be something on during the night, you know, it's a pop room, it's a busy pub, it's a nice pub, you know, we'll go there. So the locals, you know, we're actually helping them commercially as well. And that goes for all the other gateways that we've got in the community. So it benefits the town as well, really. You know, the Premier shop next door tells me, you know, they make a bomb on a Wednesday night. And then I said, why is that? Well, of course, we do a raffle, don't we? And they're all in there, our lot, buying sweets. We've been told off about that before now, that we shouldn't be raffling off sweets. But anyway, that's what the members want. And they make a bomb on these sweets they buy and bring the bars of chocolates or boxes of chocolates. And they said they make a mark, you know, an increase in profits.
Anyways, what would have happened if you'd suggested taking people to the pub when you first joined Bencap Cardigan?
I don't know. I think they would have been concerned, I think. Because with their gateway, it was, you know, bingo. And we do bingo. You know, they love their bingo. But only one game. It takes about 10 minutes, not a whole night thing. And then they go to a restaurant once a month or something. Nothing wrong with that, but how are members now, people with learning disabilities, they're expecting more out of us, you know? They want to work. Some don't want to work, but some do. Yeah. Some want to study more. Some want to socialise more. Some want to travel. Some want to have a romantic relationship. Mm. Some want to get married, you know? What they want nowadays is a lot more than what it was, 30, 40 years ago. So you, as an actress, then, as a charity, you've got to, you know, it's member-led. Mm-hmm. They are the ones that tell us what to do. Like tonight now, this morning it was on Facebook. Oh, what are we doing tonight, Jan? I don't know. What do you want to do? You know, it's not, we'll do this, mm-hmm. then the other. So there we spend a fortune on pub garden games, you know, like giant Connect Fours and giant games mm-hmm. out of the garden. So we are darts tonight, but outside, you know.
Yeah.
And it's their choice. It's mm-hmm. they decide, you know. That's the difference.
Was it member-led
big difference.
When you joined, would you say?
No, I don't think it was. No. I mean, I think things have changed, not as a men captivity girl things, but things have changed because of the different acts. Like advocacy, self-advocacy, we're teaching our members now to have a voice. We're teaching people to listen to those voices. Nothing without us type of attitude. It's their club. Makes it a lot easier for us because we'll organise it for them, but we don't have to think about what to do. They'll tell us what to do. And I think as long as they listen, people listen to them, then you know, we'll be okay. But there's still a lot of people out there whose attitude is, or them.
Was it something that happened gradually becoming member-led, or was it just happened over time?
Oh, well, it was a gradual thing as far as we were concerned. We still had people who didn't quite understand, were not very PC about things. So it took a while. And it's still a battle sometimes. In fact, I often think with the situation we're in at the moment with a lot of cuts and how the service has been cut back and stuff like that, that we are getting back to that. And there's a big, big danger of getting back to the old days where, you know, it's whatever money you've got, that's what you get. And we're not listening to the people as much as looking at money-wise what's going on,
etc. How easy has it been for your members with a learning disability to get used to leading the organisation and, you know, making decisions? And
that's a hard one, really. I mean, we had a self-advocacy group in Ceredigion called Ceredigion People First, and that finished, and we were left alone with no advocacy service, self-advocacy. There was an independent advocacy service, but legislation has changed, not for the better, I'm afraid. So Menga Ceredigion decided that we'd set up our own self-advocacy group. And it was called, the members called it Our Voice, Our Choice. And we helped it for a while, facilitated it, helped them with meetings, administration, stuff like that, until they were set up. And we consciously then let them go. Because one thing with self-advocacy, it has to be independent of any other organisation, any other service, because otherwise it won't work. And we were really, really big on that. But it is difficult to get them to run a meeting effectively. So you still need to support them. But it has to be that it's supporting them and not doing it for them. And that's been a really difficult transition, especially if you're somebody like me. I like to be in control of stuff. And I, you know, I play myself a lot where I'd be in the meeting and I'd say, oh, you don't do it that way, you do it this way, you know, and then I'm trying to have hands off. Mm. It's more my problem, I think, than their problem. Because on Saturday they had a meeting and I stuck myself out of the chair and I was like, I'm not saying a word, I'm keeping my mouth. And do you know what? They ran it fine. So I think there's a bit of confidence in letting them get on with it, but be there to be supportive mm-hmm. and not be
yeah.
mm-hmm. doing it.
So Mencap Ceredigion is separate to Mencap Cymru. What's that relationship been like in the last 20 years?
It's been an odd one, really, to be honest with you, because First of all, it's difficult for people outside that don't know us to differentiate the two. And I think they have to be honest, because we do two different things, as far as I'm concerned. Mencap Ceredigion is a branch, very small branch, of volunteers. Mencap Cymru is a charity, and it's throughout Wales. And we're not the same in as much. We have the same ideals, we have the same hopes and so forth for our members. We support them in the same way, but we do two different things. So that was difficult for me because I thought of them as two separate things, in as much one fighting the other for the same throw, if you know what I mean. And that was hard for me, especially funding-wise. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of issues that really I wasn't happy about, where, for instance, if somebody did a will and it was somebody died and it was somebody in Ceredigion, the money that will was going to Cardiff. So we didn't get a look in. So there's a lot of that going on. But I don't know. We work really, really closely now. I think we've got a really good, positive relationship. Wayne is very supportive of the work that we do, as is he's supportive of all the other branches. And you yourself, Paul, and all the other staff, always at the end of the phone. The head office, you know, in Kidderminster. Is it Kidderminster?
London.
Where the main office is.
There's another.
There's nothing that they won't do for you if you want to get free T-shirts or you want some advice on, hey, you know, as volunteering issues or insurance or stuff like that. They're there. And I think as a small branch, you need that big brother support, do you know what I mean? But at the same time, Wayne's really good in letting us get on with this as well. As long as what we do is legal, I don't think he's bothered. But, you know, he's really, really supportive. And things like, you know, one thing I do find with being in West Wales, big gripe with me is everything is happening in Cardiff, you know. If a charity is an all-Wales charity, they should be covering all of Wales. Mm. You know, they get their funding to support all of Wales. But you often find all of these charities are based in Cardiff and all the money is drifted over to Cardiff. Whereas with Mencap, they very much, I feel, and I see anyway, that they spread their resources across Wales. They spread their funding, if possible, across Wales and all their projects and all their people. I mean, now we've got a development officer, Rodri, who lives in St. Ranulph, that comes West Wales. Never had that before. And, you know, I think we're quite lucky as a branch to be associated with Mencap as a whole. And, you know, it's a recognised, well-respected charity. Plus, we've got our supported housing as well here, half of which are covered by Mencap as well. So, you know, we've got a strong base in Ceredigion. I know a lot of other counties don't even have a branch. But, you know, I think it's quite a good outfit where the national, regional and branch works really, really well together.
Could you tell me a little bit about the Comic-Con?
Comic-Con, well, we as a branch have the fingers in lots of pies. You know, we have a gateway, we have a swimming group, we've got gardening, artwork, Sunday lunch clubs, all sorts of things. But my daughter was really, really interested, and a lot of our members, in animation, anime, Disney, and other Japanese stuff. And she used to love dressing up and going to Comic-Cons, you know, conventions where you dress up and so forth. And we used to take her to London and stuff. I remember taking her to one in TX, what's it called? One of these big places, anyway.
XL Centre.
The XL Centre. And I can remember going in there and she was dressed up. I wasn't. And I felt really, really standing out, you know, I was in normal clothes and everybody else was dressed up. And it's a massive place. And there's this big room in there. And they were all collecting something or other and bits. Thousands. And somebody said to me, there's 80,000 people in this room, all dressed up. And I know there's only 75,000 living in Ceredigion. We could have filled the whole of Ceredigion. And there's a massive, massive different things to do with animation. But what I noticed was an awful lot of people with learning disabilities and autism who were really keen. Why, I don't know, but there's a massive following. And Beth, I used to go to all of these places, and I've said there's only two places that I have seen Beth, and which I would say she fits in. She's like a normal person, if there's such a word as normal. And that's Disneyland Paris, Disneyland in Florida, and any convention, right? And they fit in.
Yeah.
And I remember Beth, and we were driving back from London, and she said to, oh, these journeys. Can we not have one in Wales? Can we not have one in Ceredigion? I said, what? A convention? Yeah. I said, oh, yeah, I suppose we could. And we thought, yeah, it'd be a great idea. But nothing ever happened. And there's this one particular night, we were in Cardigan, I'll never forget, Cardigan Gateway. And there was a support worker there who was new, and I'd never seen her before. And Bethan hooked up to this support worker, and there was disco and dancing, and they were talking together, and they were really into, you know, each other type of thing. And I spoke to her, and her name was Rowan. And she said, oh, Beth, that's fascinating. I love anime, she said. And she and Bethan had this T-shirt on with some anime remark that any serious, serious anime person, you know,
yeah,
no one else in the world would have, but an anime. And she was attracted to that T-shirt. And it turned out that Rowan, not only had she been to Japan, where Bethan would love to go to, she'd actually gone to university in Japan to study animation. And she was actually involved with Wild Films on a part-time basis as well. So she was doing a bit of support work, and she was involved in that. And what developed out of that was Rowan and Bethan, Hannah, who's another support worker, who's what a brilliant artist, an animator, and Jake, who is a well-known, Jake particularly, who's a well-known filmmaker in Cardigan, teamed up, the four of them, and they set up Ceredigion Animation Group. And with that group, they meet up on a regular basis, and they've made good 3, 4, 5 films, animated films. During COVID, they were having Zoom meetings every week. And not only are members in Ceredigion, but with people from Cardiff, Bridgend, Pembrokeshire, and they meet up on Zoom, and they're brilliant artists as well. And they do an awful lot of work together. And they've had some awareness days. They've had some workshops in Cardigan, Small World Theatre and everything. And we got some money from Wife Films and Film Cymru to actually have a convention. And so we had the first convention, and about 300 or 400 people came along to it. We made 2 films for it. We actually, in the Aberystwyth Arts Centre. We had the next one then on the 28th of March. I'll never forget it. 2020 or 2019. When was COVID? 2020. And that was the week that Ceredigion decided to do a lockdown. We did it a week before, actually.
Oh, okay.
And I had Bethan on the computer telling everybody that we had to cancel. But we had ours about 2 months ago. We've got loads of people coming along. And we're now determined, unless we've got another COVID, to do it on an annual basis.
Mm. Is it just so people with a learning disability coming to the convention, or just
most are, yeah, but no, there are people there as well who are just interested in animation, and it's working with universities and other agencies. I can see it being a lot bigger than what it is, but it's just getting less slowly.
Yeah. What was the impact of COVID on the organisation?
Crikey. that was a big shock to us because everything came to a stop. It wasn't a gradual stop. It was a stop.
Mm.
So all our social clubs couldn't meet. So we, within a week, decided, and we were probably one of the first, to use social media. I found out about Zoom. Never heard of Zoom before. Still don't quite understand how it works, but anyway. And very, very quickly, we were using FaceTime. We got a lot of volunteers along. And we did things with our members. Things like Monday night was a quiz night. Wednesday, we decided a comedy night. Everybody had to come along with a joke. Mm. We'd have marks out of 10. We had Friday coffee morning. Then we had things like Keep Fit. We had a couple of volunteers that did Keep Fit with them. We did some cooking. We didn't do much cooking, actually. We could have done more. We had Tom Evans, who is a writer. He's got a relatives with learning disabilities. And he wrote a whole book, if you like. And he wrote it and read it every single day of the lockdowns.
Oh.
Every day. And other people did. I mean, Rhiannydd, for instance, she used to do the competition of the week where she'd take a photo of a jar with jelly beans in it. And you had to guess how many. So on a Monday, you'd have the picture, and then people would be sending in their guessing, you know? Mm. And the next week would be a box of pencils. How many pencils are things like that? So they would get involved with that sort of thing. And then we got a pop group Dylan was friends with, and the lead singer did a night where he sang all the songs from group. But we had George from Cavity Entertainers having discos, and we were fat. I used to say, and busier now than when we were before COVID. But the other thing that we did as well was we were on the other side of the phone if people were in need of any help. So, and we would refer, like if people couldn't get to a shop or something like that, we could ring the authorities and get them to a food bank or whatever. So there was that link. But what we were conscious of was that not many people, well, people who weren't on social media, how were they coping? We were disappointed, I have to say, with some of the supported housing organisations not being supportive in getting their members on social media. Every house has got a computer stuck in their office. That's the problem. But there was nobody. I can remember one support worker telling me, I don't agree with social media. I think it's terrible that they can all sorts of problems. I said, I don't really care what you think. I want that person on Facebook. He's able to do it. I want you to support it. And as it was, you had to. But I think the worst thing about COVID, certainly for people who weren't in contact with us through social media or Zoom, was they missed their friends. You know, a lot of people think people with disabilities, you know, they're not really good at communicating or socialising, or, you know, they don't have eye contact, so how can they make friends and how, you know, all of this business. But actually, they are the most social people in the world, and they really, really missed Gateway. There was one person who used to ring me every week, and all he said to me on the other side of the phone was, when's the Christmas disco? When's the Gateway? When am I going to see my friends and stuff? And they were breaking their hearts because they just didn't have a social life. And I always think when I see these policies coming from the Welsh Assembly, you know, supporting people to go to work, whether they like it or not, they've got to be supported to go to work, or supporting people to live independently, to cook, to pay their bills. I don't know. It's a different thing. But there's very, very little. And I was hoping they'd learn from the COVID situation. Very little about social life. And they are allowed, they have a right to have a social life. But there's very little provision up there for a social, like, supporting people to go out, not just go to the pub. I've seen support workers taking people for a coffee. Going for a coffee seems to be a big thing. Or going to the pub for a drink. But nothing about socialising. Helping them to get to know other people, for instance. That's what we aim to do with our gateways. And we, you know, a social worker who sits next to a person in one of our gateways and they don't get involved with their client or other people.
Mm.
They're there on their phones. We take a photo of them and we show them it. This is not the way to support people. So we encourage our social workers and support workers, and they do, to not only get involved with the clients, but also get involved with the whole group. So the client can get to know people, be friendly, you know, socialise.
Yeah.
And they get a lot more out of their social events by doing that, really. They missed it over COVID. And then mental health, I think we're getting really upset. But I tell you, the first gateway plant of plant, I mean, there were tears, you know, there were just hugs. Although we weren't supposed to hug, we were. But that was the first one we had, was really emotional, which just goes to show that people with disabilities can, you know, have certain relationships that are really important for them.
When
know?
Lockdown ended and things got back to normal, did things for Mencap Ceredigion get back to normal straight away? Or
We really wanted to get back straight away into normality. There were legislations that stopped us to do it as fast as we could do, I suppose. You know, we had to have our meetings outside instead of inside and all of this business. We had to have masks, we had to do this, we had that, which, you know, made life a little bit difficult. But I would say within a month, we were back to normal. But
were the members back to normal?
Yeah, to a certain degree, I think. I think it took them a bit of time, you know, with the wearing the masks and the worry of COVID and, oh, we can't touch or, you know, things like that. And especially support workers who worked for agencies who were very strict about, you know, wearing the mask for a lot longer than they needed to, or couldn't sit next to people. Their regulations are quite strict, really. Whereas we're more laid back, I suppose. We're more maverick, we're more in your face. Which makes it more disappointing that a lot of agencies now, and certainly the authorities, are still not back to normal. The day centres are still not open, and we're talking 3 years now. The offices are still not manned. You know, now if I want to get in contact with somebody in social services, I've got to go through the reception area. They take my telephone number or my email address, and then that person will come back to me. And I know that person is working from home, which often means the baby's crying in the background or the dog is barking. You know, my computer's down. My computer's next door. I can't. Oh, and I think, oh, dear, 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 dear. You know, things have not gone back to normal, and it'll take a while, I think. People have been given choices of working from home, which I think is good because, you know, environmentally it's good. But they need to be making sure that the service doesn't change and the people that are working from home are actually working in a place that can be adapted into a working area. And I don't think that's been done. And I think we're missing out on services, certainly, because of that and the way services are run at the moment. So they're far, far slower to get back to normal. But as far as we're concerned, as if COVID never happened, really.
So finally, been at Mencap Ceredigion 23 years?
23.
Are there any new Jans joining?
Oh, I hope so. It's hard to get volunteers, really hard, especially nowadays because, you know, people are working one, two jobs. You know, things are harder nowadays, really. We've got a couple of people coming along. I think it's more my fault than anything in trying to let things go. I'm the worst one to delegate. I give somebody a job to do. They're not doing it properly. Give it to me, I'll do it. I'll finish it all, I'll do it. But we have started, we have to do one again, where we had a friend's tea, where it's a mixture of interested friends and parents. And I think we need to work and persevere on that, because otherwise, you know, no, there won't be another Jan. And you've got to have another Jan, you know, to have a pool of volunteers, you know, to take over for the future. We'll
finish there. Thank you very much.
North. North stick.